Thank you. Good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. Housekeeping first. No show tomorrow because July 4th is effectively falling on a Saturday, so it's being celebrated by most people tomorrow, including by us. No TMI tomorrow also, but just to be quirky and weird, DMZ America will be on at 11 a.m. tomorrow. It's moving from Thursdays to Fridays. Just a reminder of that call to action. If you're just joining us or you're watching live for the first time, we're asking for you to participate in the live chat, even if you're not interested in saying anything of substance. I mean, it doesn't stop our politicians from talking. Just go on to the live chat on YouTube, sorry, on Rumble. If you're on YouTube, this is not for you. You don't have to worry about it. But if you're on Rumble, please go in if you haven't chatted this month at all and just say yo or hi or whatever. And you don't have to do anything else. We need 75 unique chatters a month. And we're almost there, but you know we're not there. So otherwise, we get kicked out of the whole show, gets demonetized, and it really sucks. So Rumble changed the rules, and ultimately the rule change will be good for the show. But right now, we're just adjusting to it. So we'd really appreciate your help. We're here 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. Thanks so much for joining us. Good morning, JT.
What's going on, man? You doing okay?
I am doing good. I'm preparing to bake. That is the official term here. Temperature is expected to go up to 99 degrees actually today, with a heat index of 108. So it'll be nice and toasty if you like that sort of thing. How about it down there in Richmond? How is it?
It's going to be hot. I don't mind the heat, to be honest. Like I said, when I was abroad, I loved it when it was hot. I got familiar with it. I got used to it, being able to wear your flip-flops every day of the year.
Were you in Azerbaijan in the summer?
Because
that's crazy. So,
I mean, the thing is, though, in certain countries, like near the equator, it was always hot. Like, it was like 90 degrees every day. Like, in Malaysia, it was like 95 every day. Like, every time you get out of bed in the morning. And even
and
in Japan.
And humid as balls, especially in the middle of the day.
Yes. It is brutal. It is brutal. But you got used to it.
I agree with you. You do get used to it. And I'm a huge heat pussy. I mean, I just hate hot weather. If it's over, like, I could really seriously, you know, roll Scandinavian style, like, never see the temperature over 40. I'd be totally fine.
Oh, Ted, that's wild.
Don't cry. Here it's 57.
I'm crying inside.
Listen, I told you should just moved here to Montana. I said that you had a good friend who was here, lots of guns, plenty of things to do. And you said you're like, no, I'm gonna stay in New York in the communist utopia.
I remember the conversation going quite like that. But you know,
that's because you were drinking and I was drinking Coke.
Yeah, well, I've never had it. It was the first time I'd ever had it. First and last time I've ever had an alcoholic beverage was in Montana.
Oh, right.
I can't believe that's the first last time you've had alcohol.
You keep lying like that, Ted. Every one of your kids would be born naked.
Never heard that one before. All right, so today, main topics. And, of course, whatever you guys want to talk about, we're always open to. So I was amused by this story about the fireworks display. So Donald Trump's is, of course, the host of the big DC fireworks display this year at the Washington Mall. They do it every year. Normally they use 20,000 munitions, but because it's Trump and it has to be bigly. And also, in fairness, it is the 250th. And that
it's
is
250. Yeah.
It's the 250. You got to go big or go home. Right. But anyway, from 20,000 to 850,000 this year. That's for a 40-minute show. Usually it goes for about 20 minutes. It goes from 10:30 or 11 p.m. tomorrow. This will be, I guess, on Saturday. And according to documents revealed by the Washington Post, issued by the National Park Service, the environmental impact is going to be substantial and very negative. They expect hazardous levels of pollution around the National Mall, very unhealthy conditions in central Washington, and there's going to be huge amounts of particulate called PM2.5, which basically causes asthma and all sorts of cardiopulmonary diseases. I have asthma, so I'm sensitive to anything that causes asthma. I mean, it is a rough disease sometimes. And, you know, that's an affliction. You know, I just thought that was amusing. Also, Russia got tired of getting beaten up in their energy sector and causing fuel shortages. Ukrainians have been busting up oil refineries and stuff, and it's cut off Crimea from gas deliveries. So Russia struck back. They fired a massive strike using long-range precision air, land, and sea-based weapons and attack drones yesterday. So, you know, that war is, you know, still going. I wouldn't say heating up again. It never deheated. And right. Ohio, my home state, is getting fucking fried by the massive heat dome across the United States. Triple-digit temperatures in all major Ohio cities, from Cincinnati to Dayton to Columbus to Toledo and Cleveland. So, you know, lots to talk about. And, the new jobs figures are out. By the way, that just happened just as we were preparing to go on the air. The employers added 57,000 new jobs in the month of June. Unemployment rate dropped to 4.2%. So I had some thoughts about that. Basically, that's very anemic job growth. You like to see 200,000 to 300,000 a month at least. So the fact that the unemployment rate did not go up, to me, indicates that a lot of people are dropping out of the workforce and that the worker participation rate is dropping. Discouraged workers, people who are just like, fuck all these fake ads on Indeed and LinkedIn. A lot of them are fake. They're bots. They're just like, fuck this. There's no real jobs out there. I'm just not going to look. I'll, you know, try to hustle some, you know, freelance, whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not a pretty picture, but I guess it's from a political standpoint, probably not going to move the needle either way.
Let's start with the fireworks. I may surprise you on this.
Okay.
I don't care. I love fireworks. I love fireworks. And it is quarter of a millennia. I don't think that's mine. We should go balls up.
It is a big deal. 250 is a big deal.
250 is a big deal. I mean, granted, we're showing our age. It's a big deal, right?
Long in the
go tube. Big. Go like this will be. This is a Trumpian occasion. Go big. You have all like meaning. This is not like I've had the biggest crowds in the history of crowds at the inauguration. Okay, it's not that, right? This is something where I can actually get behind whoever is going big on. When Juneteenth happened, I remember I was sitting here. I forget what I was doing. I think I was up at a desk working, and I heard explosions go off. And then it was another one and another one. And for nearly 10 minutes, they seemingly emptied everything that they had at their disposal that they've had for 250 years all at once for 10 minutes. They went bananas. There's a black college here, Virginia Union. I suspect it was coming from there or somewhere close to there, but in Richmond is predominantly, or the very least, heavily black city. Mm-hmm. So for Juneteenth, they showed out. They showed out. My room was literally shaking from the explosions that took place. But again, it's a African-American city. Mm-hmm. Juneteenth, this is their time to go bananas. And I guess I feel that way about the explosions, fireworks. Go bananas. They get over it. The environmental level out. Just don't be around the Washington, D.C. area for a few weeks. It'd be all right.
Yeah, I don't even think it's going to take a few weeks. I mean, you know, a day or two, especially if it rains, that'll be it. Yeah. It'll be.
Exactly.
I mean, so, yeah, no, I mean, look, I will agree with you about that. My main critique of this fireworks display is, I mean, just generally the way the president has politicized the 250th, right, which really blows. But the thing that really I think sucks is, I mean, I'm not going to it. I don't live there. But starting so late sucks. I mean, fireworks are such a thing for kids. And like asking parents to drag their kids out at 11 o'clock to midnight to 1 a.m. I mean, it's like you're not going to a, you know, you're not going hanging out with cocaine whores. I mean, it's a fucking fireworks display. I mean, it's like, what the fuck are you doing up at that hour? Unless if you're not committing crimes, you shouldn't be awake at that hour. It's like, I don't know. I don't get it.
It's a celebration. It's not about kids.
Should start like at 9.
We'll put it this way. When Richmond was doing the Juneteenth thing, it wasn't for kids. It was an affirmation. It was
Juneteenth isn't for kids, but July 4th is for kids.
It's the celebration of independence.
Sure. That's and for the adults too. But I mean, the point is, come on, your parents didn't bring you to fireworks on 4th of July. My mom did.
No.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's the personal Lent. I mean, you know, it's like the asthma thing. I mean, also, I got to be honest. I don't care. I stopped caring for fireworks after I went to Afghanistan in 2001 and I came back and I was so like, after that, I was so high strung every time I heard like a, you know, an engine like backfire or anything like that. I was just like, yeah, I can do without that. It's not about the loud noise. It's about the explosions.
I see.
And so I think I'm over it now. But for years, it was really a problem. For me, a lot of vets don't like fireworks.
Well, I can understand why. I mean, they are bombs. They're just bombs that are at a lower level, right?
Yeah.
To look pretty as opposed to kill people. No, I get that. I don't care.
They are beautiful and stunning and amazing.
They're beautiful. And have you seen the ones that China be doing with their drones and stuff like that?
They're amazing. That's awesome. So cool. Yeah.
I guess my thing is it's an affirmation of sorts. It's emancipatory. It's we're here. We're still here against fate, reality, everything in the universe that wants to kill us. We're here, goddammit. And we're popping off fireworks as a demonstration of such.
Yeah, you'll be able to see that shit from space for sure.
Tell you all what.
Personally, I like it.
Open invitation to the two of y'all. Let's plan for it. Let's make this happen. Next year, next 4th of July, y'all come here to Kalispell.
Oh, it'll be great.
We'll watch the fireworks display. We'll live stream the whole thing. I'll take you up to Lone Pine State Park. It's a little park. It's right by Minna Valley. So by definition, I mean, we're just surrounded, right, by mountains. We'll go up there. And you can see the fireworks from Eureka, which is like right on the Canadian border, down to Pulsa. And you're just that high up. And we got Flathead Lake. It's the largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi River. It is a panoramic unlike anything that you'll ever see. And to your point, JT, if you go back, you know, look at what the founders achieved. They went to war against the most powerful nation on earth, which is the British Empire. One, established independence. Then the country tried to destroy itself like 70 years later, through the Civil War. Yeah. And we're still here. I'm the first one to say the country's far from perfect, but we're still here. That means something. And that should be celebrated. And the fact that Trump has politicized this and that so many people are just, are falling into partisan politics over should we celebrate the 4th? Should we not celebrate the 4th? Should we celebrate the nation?
Got to celebrate it.
I mean, this is your country. If you don't, if you cannot celebrate the country that you're born in or you chose to move to, then maybe you should leave.
If anything, this celebration, if Trump hadn't politicized it, and that's part of my complaint, it would have been bigger. There would have been more participation. It would have been bipartisan. Liberals and Democrats, progressives would have been into it also. That's part of it's smaller than it should be because of Trump.
If this was Obama, do you think it would have been as politicized?
No.
Like meaning if it was Obama, would Republicans be as
Republicans might have worked themselves into a lather being pissed off because it was Obama, but Obama would not have, you know,
politicized it. Agreed.
Wouldn't have politicized it the way that Trump did. I mean, Trump literally took it away from the National Parks Service, organization that's set up to do this, right? Yeah. It's like his thing is called Freedom 250. The original thing was called America 250. It was set up before he even his first term. They were all getting prepared. This was another grift for him. Like they've been using this to line their pockets in the Trump family. So it's all, you know, he politicized it on purpose. It might have become politicized under Obama, but I don't think it would have been intentional.
Agreed. I don't think Obama would have been politicized. I mean, Obama's
thing was... I don't like Obama, but I mean, I just don't think that would have happened.
No, agreed. Yeah, this is not a rah-rah Obama. It was trying to put it in a different context.
No,
like,
I appreciate
a different person. Like, meaning, is it the office? Like, is it Is there a politics of such that any particular political figure would have been political? Because we have a weird, it's not weird, but we have a, if we had a king, the king would do this.
Yeah.
Because the king would be apolitical. The king would be above it all. You want to bring people. And that is, weirdly enough, a weakness in our system. Like there is no figurehead. There is nobody above it all in this case. And this is not Jamal, you know, calling for a king. It's not that.
No.
If there was a figure that is above the political space that doesn't get involved in politics, but is representative of the nation, maybe that's what I'm talking about. Like you could say the King of England is the representative of England, even though technically, okay, spiritually, he has no political power. Meaning if he tried to assert that power, they would take the power away from him immediately in the parliament, right? It's the very fact that the king sits there above it all is the reason why the king can remain a king in the UK. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm saying if there was a 250th anniversary of the UK, and I know the UK is thousands of years old or over a thousand years old, but if there was 250th anniversary, the king would do it, not the political space, because the political space by definition creates division. We don't have a cohesive element in this country, and it's to our detriment. I hope that makes sense. This is not me calling for a king. Just be very clear.
I think it's totally clear to me, anyway. And I'm probably the dumbest person watching right now. I wanted to ask. Maybe Robbie would be interested in chiming in on this too. I mean, I was giving some thought to, you know, how much of an achievement really was the American Revolution, and I think we tend to overblow it. You know, I think the United States was, I mean, sorry, Great Britain was far more interested in holding on to its other colonies than they were to us. And they didn't, they kind of half-assed their attempt to suppress the revolution. I mean, they didn't really unleash the full strength of the empire against us, militarily or otherwise. And it was kind of like they were willing to fight back and try to hold on to it, but they didn't go tooth and nail. It wasn't existential for them. They cared about the Caribbean colonies a lot more because that's where the money was coming from the sugar plantations and the slave trade and all that. They cared about the colonies, but it wasn't like the end of the world in 1781 when Cornwallis got borked. I kind of think we tend to pat ourselves on the back a lot about how much of a military achievement this was to defeat Great Britain.
Go ahead, Robbie.
Go ahead, JT.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think people overemphasize the military achievement, but they de-emphasize the social and political achievement. And so here's what I mean by that. The United States is the first nation on earth founded imperfectly, but founded with the promise that everyone had a true freedom, a freedom of speech and expression. That did not exist anywhere else. And most of the world, it still does not exist. Most places, there are speech codes and everything else. You go to Germany and you say the wrong thing, or if you go to Great Britain and you post an offensive Facebook post, you go to prison. The freedom of speech is something that is uniquely American. That's something we should celebrate more than anything else. The freedom of religion, the freedom of conscience. That's huge. I mean, before the American Revolution, for example.
However, you know, they lifted that shit from France, right? I mean, because we didn't have that. We didn't have that in the Articles of Confederation. That's only later.
That's true. But what I'm saying is that would have never happened without the victory that was achieved, and also the Articles of Confederation.
France is the first country that enshrined.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to tell you, Robbie. It's France that we pull that from. Libertad and what is it? I forget the exact phrase.
I get that, but the problem is that France is never able to encode it. Like even now, I mean, there are hate speech laws in France. Go there and say something is offensive and see what happens to you.
Well,
don't throw you in prison.
It's like Germany, where mentioning Nazism is banned officially.
Well, not as bad as still bad, Ted.
But you're right. No, it shouldn't.
That's the point that I'm making.
No, it shouldn't. It's true.
You know, and there are a lot of places. Hell, even to this day. If you live in an Islamic country and you decide to say, you know, go pee on the Quran, what's going to happen to you? You're probably going to get executed. Or if you say, I'm going to convert my religion, you're going to get put down. Here, in the United States,
depends on the country, Jordan, let's say, right?
But that's the point that I'm making. Is I hear the United States, you have the freedom of conscience. You are able to say what it is that you want to say. You're able to espouse those beliefs Could there be a social cost? Yeah, absolutely. But it's not coming down from behind by the state.
But that's an achievement. But I guess my point is that, like, getting back to it, like, where this is about the American Revolution, which, by the way, from a Marxist standpoint, is not a revolution because it did not replace one class of people with another class of people as elites. The elites remain the same. If you were rich before 1775, you were rich after 1781. If you were poor before, you were poor after. You know, I mean, that's.
It's the changeover, which
it and it's right also now. Not a it's the and the and the Brits were kind of like it's kind of like us in Afghanistan. We could have won, we just didn't have the political will. It just wasn't worth it, and that's how it was for the Brits. We weren't worth doing what it took to hold on to the colonies.
But that's the issue of empire in general, right?
France is right there, and they just had the 7-year war with them like 8 years before. I mean, could they afford to fight another major European war? The answer is no.
I agree with Robbie.
No, that's true.
I mean, these guys were at war for God knows how long. I mean, that's the issue of empire in general, right? I mean, like, the U.S. is fighting Iran, but the U.S. is not raising 1 million men military.
Because we don't need to win.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
First, like, at the wall, and we hope that it went. We hope, and if it sticks, great. And if not, who cares? Yeah, we got our asses kicked pretty much. What, Vietnam, Somalia?
I think this is the thing of empires. Like, they don't
Iraq.
It's not existential for us, mm-hmm. And so it's a war of choice. And the same thing with Britain. I don't think losing America was existential. But they didn't want to lose.
You could tell because they weren't that pissed off about it, right? Like, they made nice with us right after the revolution.
I mean, the War of 1812.
Yeah, but before that, which is funny, right? Like, I mean, it was kind of weird because we basically kicked our French allies to the curb, like, right away. Yes. Like, hey, thanks a lot. Oh, sorry it caused a whole tank to your economy and caused a revolution over there. Our bad. Anyway, hello, old British friends. We speak the same language. We love you. And we didn't care about investment or anything.
Well, also, and the colonists were just Brits. Even then, they were just Brits.
They were
Brits. Yes, they might have called themselves Americans, fair enough. But they were Brits. They were British.
Yeah. And in fairness, I mean, the U.S. Navy was like the Bahama Shard and two whalers. I mean, seriously, what was a fledgling United States going to do? It was broke.
The Articles of Confederation was made on their French buddies.
The ultimate counterweight
to Britain was always the French.
I know, but in 1812, we could have as easily went to war with France than Britain.
We were at odds
with both.
Well, look at the XYZ affair. We were effectively at war with the French. They were pressing American sailors. So let's not forget that fact. Now, nations, here's the thing that people need to understand. And J-Tam, I know you'll agree with me on this.
Well, wait. The Brits were press ganging American sailors. They were at war. Basically, they were trying to have a blockade, and they were at war with Napoleon.
Yeah, both were.
It's so wild, which is why we could have ended up in war with both. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rob. Yeah.
Nations don't have friends. They have interests.
Yes.
And that's something that people need to understand. John Mearsheimer, great book, The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. If you've never read it, please read it. Fascinating book. Nations will work in their interests, even if that means that they're going to take an irrational act in order to maintain their survival. Yeah. The United States back then was a fledgling nation. It wasn't even, it was like a collection of Greek city-states, especially under the Articles of Confederation. There was no strong central government. It was never supposed to be. Like, if the founders saw what we have now, they'd be calling for a civil war, like, right now. Now, that's a statement of fact. That's why we have states, not provinces. That's why states were responsible for their own military defense. That's why states actually issued their own money. It was never supposed to be what we have now, which is a strong, centralized nation state. It was supposed to be a federal union of sovereign states.
Robbie, you're right. But if we would this country, as big as it was, and, you know, consider its size in the context of a pre-automotive society, right? Where, you know, a society where during the War of 1812, communications are so bad that Andrew Jackson has to go, you know, win the Battle of New Orleans without even knowing that the peace treaty had already been signed because of the communications were so poor. Would it have been possible for a country this size to be manageable if it wasn't centralized and more federalized than, sort of a loose Article of Confederation, a loose Confederacy?
I think it would work. Honestly, I think it would have worked better. I think that's fundamentally one of the reasons why the Roman Empire collapsed is that they tried too hard with that clenched fist, and all the sand ran out. The best thing to do is people are going to work in their best interests. And what is your best interest? A collective defense and a stable economy. Those are the two things at the end of the day really matter more than anything else. That's what the central government should, for really any nation, in my opinion, should strive to do. And if you do that, it's in the interest of the several states to work together. And you got to remember, during the War of 1812, New England threatened secession. The South is all about war with the Brits. It was New England that wasn't. And they took it so far, like they actually voted on leaving the Union. So this is not a radical concept. People work their interests. And so that's one of the reasons why no government, look at you, Trump, should declare war unilaterally. That's why it must go through the Congress to reflect the will of the people. You got to make your case first. So you're able to make your case.
I'm not so sure we would have become a superpower, a global hegemon. Not that I think we should.
That would be a good thing, Ted. That would have been a good thing. We never should have been. I mean, Right. Look at our geography. We have two huge oceans on either side of us. You have Canada to the north and Mexico to the south. What threat do we have?
None.
Unless we bring it here.
Right, none.
Well, we have none now.
Why do we need an army more than 200,000 men?
Well, no. Case. You're arguing that from now.
No, I'm arguing that from like the point of from 1860. Because logistics is still a thing.
We had the Mexico was either a French or a Spanish colony, right?
Right. That's what I mean. You're arguing this from now.
And France,
looking back in time, France, you have to argue it from great, then.
France and Spain were great powers in the 19th century.
Yes, yeah. And they would have preyed upon the United States. Keep in mind, part of the reason that we were at odds with France and Britain is because we believed that they were working with the Native Americans against.
And Canada was a British colony. Right.
Yeah, and Canada was a British colony. We even talked about attacking Canada, if I'm not mistaken, but they pushed us back. We failed.
Oh, we didn't talk about it. We did.
I talked about it. Yeah,
that's what I mean.
We failed in that military campaign.
So we had enemies.
Maine.
The point that I think Ted is making is we had enemies. It wasn't like the strong central. Most of our shipping at the time were boats that were, there's a name for it, basically trading goods, services that turned into military when the privateers, sure. I think that's the name of it, in Civ, they called them privateers. But basically people who were merchants who turned into military when the government needed. We were a much
more
weaker.
Like mercenaries.
Yeah. We were a much weaker place. I mean, the centralized, also look at what-
This country became powerful due to something that, Robbie, you hate, the federal income tax. It's like when, Theodore Roosevelt decided, hey, we're going to make this we're going to build an empire here, just like the European countries. And the country was, couldn't afford that. And basically, they had to go where the money was. Tariffs were not bringing in enough money. And the income tax changed. It was a game changer. It brought money into federal coffers. It allowed them to raise the army that became the huge army in World War I. And we were off to the imperial races.
Yeah. Well, and how's that worked out for the American people? It's been a complete disaster.
Like shit, but that's not my point.
And the point is also, it was Wilson that did that. What Roosevelt did, Teddy, not Franklin, he had the Great White Fleet circumvent the globe with the objective of keeping trade lanes open. That was the point. Speak softly, but carry a big stick. I'm all about commerce. I'm all against imperialism. And that's the point I'm trying to make. And also, you got to remember, the United States was still a small-R Republican nation when we shit-kicked Mexico. So, I mean, that is something that happened. I mean, we took Mexico City with 12,000 men. So
we could never have held it.
Didn't need to hold it. We got what we needed.
It was a raid.
Yeah. I guess the point that's being made.
They marched across Mexico and took the capital. It wasn't a raid. That was a class A bitch slap.
It was a raid. It's like Doolittle's raid. It's a raid.
Keep it a raid. Yeah.
Huh?
It's a raid. The thing is, if you traipse in, break some things and leave, that's a raid.
Yeah, that's not you taking a capital.
What wasn't the point? Well, we did take the capital. Stonewall Jackson actually attended mass in Mexico's National Cathedral. He was an artillery officer at the time.
I guess so. I mean, we held it. If they gave it back, then it's not keep, okay. This is quibbling over.
We didn't conquer Mexico. That's not the point that I'm making. I'm saying that the objective
captured Mexico City. Yeah.
The point of Polk's War is American blood on American soil.
And it's a mountainous country, too. So.
And what y'all talk about says that the United States is too weak at that time to effectively deal with an enemy. That clearly was not true. We obviously dealt with an enemy.
Well, not any random enemy. I'm talking about we were dealing with empires. At that point,
sure.
Like meaning you're talking about Spain and Britain and France, and all of these guys are engaged in their own wars, but all of these guys have colonies in various parts of either Canada, the US, Mexico, etc. Like it's not, let me ask you this. If the European Union were individual countries, individual states, what do you think the US would do in order to gain clout into Europe? They would buy off individual states to play one against the other.
Sure.
Saying without a central government, and this is not me making an argument for this kind of imperialistic overreach or anything like that, but there is something to be said about centralization to not allow larger countries to do that, which is what they would probably do to us. Hey, Virginia, you look pretty sexy.
Well, they would try to, but here's the thing, though. The United States, though, was fundamentally founded on the principle of nationalism, and I cannot think of a stronger political force than nationalism in the system.
Yeah.
If there is one, I can't think of what it is. And that up to like 10 minutes ago, people were legitimately proud to be an American. Now, what that means, who knows? So if you ask somebody now,
they want an American. They're like Mulder. They want to believe.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm like Mulder. I want to believe.
I mean, you got to remember, like, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, probably arguably up to like 1950. If you burn an American flag, odds are that you were going to get fed your teeth for breakfast. That's not the case anymore. But back then, though, it was. And so I think it would have been harder for other powers to play a state against a country. Now, it would be easier, kind of what happened in 1860, for the system to just simply fall apart and fail.
Right.
And that's a different argument. But from the outside forces,
it kind of feels a little bit like 1857 right now.
But it's just like, I think Iran is a good way to look at this. The Iranian government's incredibly unpopular until now.
Yeah, now, I mean, even
though I don't
know if you've seen the...
Because of foreign intervention.
I mean, like, literally, there's like, we united the Iranians. Now we have like women not in hijab. We have lefties, communists, socialists rallying behind the government. We've strengthened them. We're idiots, really.
Part of the reason that we strengthened them, though, is because... many of the younger people didn't live during the revolution.
Sure.
And so when the government's making this argument, like, dude, it's not entirely us.
Yeah, we have an existential threat, the big bad Americans, if they get a hold of us again, they'll fuck us again.
Yes. Basically, we have legitimized the argument that the government was making. It's the Americans. Don't blame us for this.
And like now, that's clearly true.
Right. That's clearly true. It's that part, right? It's like we have been telling you young kids.
That is not us. Cuba. If we invade again, it's going to remind all the people who are like bummed out by the long lines at the grocery store that it's like, oh, there's bigger issues. Like when we come here, when we go back to Cuba and take it over, whether it's through economic hegemony or military hegemony, we're going to fuck them and rape them that we did under the same way we did under Batista.
Yeah.
And they're going to find that out. I mean, the old people know.
The old people know. The young people don't, but they know now.
No, they do.
That's the point, right?
We got a lot of comments.
Let's do the comments.
We feel many. Okay, so, guys, we're going to race through these. Big Rig Stable Team. Come on, Ted. Friday is not a holiday, bro. Well, when the holiday falls on a weekend, we either take it on a Friday or on a Monday. And this year, it's clear that Americans are taking it on Monday, right? I mean, on Friday. But anyway, because I think if it fell on Sunday, we'd take it on Monday, right? Isn't that kind of how it works? All right. Chopra. Hello, Ted. You could join the 5 to 6% of the Hispanic population and the less than 2% of the other demographics in Kalispell, Montana. Robbie inviting another out-of-state immigrant would be interesting. I am an American. all right. APAC test dummy. Thinking about how many 850,000 fireworks will affect my dog. Probably the dog will not be happy. Pugs and Bubs,
he will not be happy.
Who lives in Brooklyn and takes care of straight cat populations. What, as opposed to gay cat populations? I'm concerned for street kitties. Street cat is probably what they meant to write. I'm concerned for, because I was like, street cats. I didn't know you could tell a cat sexual orientation. I'm concerned for veterans and PTSD every July 4th, holiday that features fireworks. No, it is an issue. I mean, for sure. Jack, Phil, I agree with Jamarl. That pollution story is a big nothing burger. How many rounds of fireworks are being blown off in Manhattan? Why there's no story covering that? Because the number's a lot less. Manchild, thanks for the dollar. For a country that has shit the bed so hard after 250 years, there's not really much to celebrate.
I celebrate the idea. Like, look, I've said before, I'm a patriot. Like, I am. I don't like what the government is doing. And it behooves me to point out that they are fucking up. As the guy said, they're shitting the bed, and they've done so for a very long time. Agreed. But I'm an American. I mean, I identify with this country. Anyway, if I went to Africa right now, I would still be seen as an American with the same value set and everything else.
Sure.
Of other Americans. It's just, it is what it is. I don't,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. J. Ramrod. R.J. Ramrod. I have an even better take. If you can't celebrate the country you were born in, instead of leaving, you should stay and fight to change it into a country you can actually be proud of. Well, that's been my take my entire life. Just filming, really. I'll agree with Robbie on one thing. If an immigrant is upset over a flag or over the culture of a country, off back to your own country. Yeah.
Some of the most patriotic people are immigrants.
That's true. Just filming, really. If you think America is a racist country, how about go to a country with majority black people? I have not been to any African.
I've been to a majority black country. I've been to Kenya. I mean, Japan. That's a black person saying, I don't see racism in Kenya when everybody's black. There's no way for me to evaluate that.
Japan is crazy racist. I mean,
I had no issue in Japan. But maybe that's the rub, though. When you go somewhere as a black American, you're just an American.
So, horses are people. Hey, Ted, how are U.S.-Turkmen relations? That's Turkmenistan. I feel like Trump and Gurbanguly would get along great. So the relationship is solid enough. Turkmenistan officially, going back to Niyazov and Turkmenbashi, has a policy of neutrality. They're right on the border with Iran. They're a former Soviet republic. They also hosted a U.S. military base. They basically have had a foreign policy of like, hey, we're in the middle here, and we know we don't want to, you know, really just be part of one polarity. So they're welcome to, you know, they talk to all comers, including all the great powers, including China, which has been kind of, Turkmenistan's probably the most extremely neutral country in Central Asia. So I would say they certainly get along with the U.S., but it's not like they're butt buddies. Captain Obvious, thanks for the fiver. Robbie's never heard of cancel culture or the Red Scare. Well, he's certainly heard of both. Let's see. Daniel Day 36, to answer Robbie's question, so you can drive to Walmart, $5. I don't know what the question was. Do you remember? I don't remember.
I don't have any question at all. I don't know. Maybe freedom of travel? I don't know.
I do think it's cool that you can – I think this is changing, but that you could drive all over this huge country and not even hit a stoplight, much less a checkpoint.
I would rather have a train. I would rather have trains.
In a lot of countries, the train stops at various provincial borders for checkpoints and stuff.
Fair enough. I accept that because those are different countries, whereas these are states.
No. I mean, like within the state, like inside. Like I have a friend. He's Jewish. He was traveling in Germany. He woke up in the middle of the night, and literally there was a German cop like knocking on his cabin, like papiers, and like he looks out the window, and it was like 3 a.m, and he said it was like, "This station is Dachau. Dachau." He was like, "Ah."
Fair enough. They do come in and ask for your papers. But it's, put it this way. When I was if I'm in Europe right now, or if I'm in, let's say Europe, I can get around far easier than I can back in the States. And the reason why I say that is, beforehand I drove. Now I don't drive because I don't necessarily want to hit anybody. I have bad eyesight after the blindness thing. It is a challenge to be in America. And if you can't drive, you are screwed. You're just screwed. Like everything, it costs more. Unless you're in New York. As opposed to me paying $5 for a tram, let's say if I'm in DC or if I'm in New York. Okay, well, if I'm in Richmond, there is no tram. There is no train. There's only cars, which means and you're going to have to pay $20, $30 for Uber to go one way and another $30 to get back, which puts a $60 tax pretty much on anything that you do and transport. Okay, that's outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that Ted, you've heard me gripe about this. Why do you not have a high-speed rail?
Yes.
From Kalispell, Montana to New York City?
There ought to be.
There should be, but we're too busy.
I've been to Richmond, cool city. And it's the way it's laid out is perfect for streetcars. It would be so good to have like a tram system like they have in Portland.
Well, we used to have one.
Oh, I'm sure. All major cities did. Yeah. Like where I grew up, Dayton had trolleys. There were still like one line when I was a kid left. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, there was a line also. I don't remember when they got rid of it. But we used to have trolleys. I guess my point is buses suck.
Yeah, buses.
Trains. I love trams. I used to love trams when I was abroad or even in New York, where you can go to the subway, go from point A to point B. You don't have to rent a car or taxi because those are going to be much more expensive. But the trams pretty much get you everywhere.
This country had so many trains, right? Like if you – like wherever you live in the United States, if you look up a map, go online and look at like an old-timey like late 1800s railway map of where you live, you're going to be shocked. There was like a train that probably stopped 3 miles away from your house, even if you lived in the country. They were everywhere, even in the countryside.
Here in Kalispell, 1900, I was looking at an old map from when the town was first founded.
Yeah.
And you know, we had a Chinatown. Now, there was a railroad going right through. I mean, that Center Street, that road that me and you went on, Ted, we walked to the bookstore.
Yeah.
That's where the railroad used to be. We saw the grain silos from where they would load the grain. And that was where Chinatown used to be. It's crazy.
Because they were the railroad workers, right? I mean,
yeah, they were. Yeah, they were the workers. And it's just what's insane is that our government has decided that instead of providing butter, it was going to provide bullets. But bullets don't do anything for the people who live here. And people need to understand that a government can either give you bullets or it can give you butter. It cannot give you both. And butter is one thing that everyone should want to have.
By the way, this is hilarious. Captain Obvious, thanks for the $5. And the hilarious question, which actually should be considered seriously, is Robbie selling his signature white t-shirts in the merch shop?
I 100% can. I will do that.
It'll be the equivalent of the dirty candy machine in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Like guaranteed, like unwashed, Robbie worn. Like, you know, like when you visit your congressman, you can get a flag that flew like 10 minutes over the Capitol. And this flag flew over the United States Capitol at this time on this day. Robbie, you could be like, you know, worn on D program Thursday, July 2nd, 2026.
Folded up by his hot wife.
It's like those women who sell their underwear. Yeah. And I was like, I've worn these for 5 days straight. Robbie, it signs this.
Worn by Robbie. Be careful, though. You're going to have all the ladies and some dudes sniffing around, literally.
Yep.
I have never been on a train. Never.
What? Really?
Never have.
I love trains.
That's,
I prefer trains than planes.
That's got to be fixed. That's got to be addressed.
Yeah. If we could get a rail line, Ted, between Kalispell to New York, I'd get on a train and come visit you.
It'd be great to have one going from Richmond to California.
There is one.
Like the entire country should be connected, not just by highway, but by rail.
The interstate is honestly one of the modern marvels of the world. Agreed. If you think about what it is, what it does. But we should have the equivalent of that for rail. Because think about how much more efficient it would be in every way, shape, and form. And so we have Amtrak. It's like, why?
I'm not bitching about the highway. I think the highway system is a marvel.
We need both. We should have both. World,
country, like concrete.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We should have both. It shouldn't be one or the other. So give us both. Yeah, we can do this.
Sunny city on the field.
JT, if we can go to the freaking moon, why can't I take a train?
High speed rail. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Why can't you take a train from Seattle to Boston?
Agreed. Agreed. It's retarded. Agreed. Agreed.
Totally.
To the goddamn moon. Why can't we build a high speed rail? Agreed.
Yeah. And to me, it's a national security issue. I mean, it's essential infrastructure. Every advanced country has it. If we're going to be an advanced country, we need to have it. Okay. We should probably talk about the heat wave, since we're still on domestic politics, and we talk a little bit about Russia, Ukraine. So
it's the weather, who cares? We can't change it. It's going to happen.
No, first of all, we are changing the weather, so we know we can change the weather. Right now, the 250 million people are going into the 4th of July weekend under major heat advisories. I mean, Americans are going to and will continue to die from this. Every year is always like the hottest year ever. So, I mean, when do we wake the fuck up and start to, I mean, we can't put the genie back in the bottle, right? We can't do deindustrialization. Even if we stopped, you know, we stopped the internal combustion engine, we could, you know, we can't go back. The so much energy is in the atmosphere. The climate's going to keep heating up. But there's so much shit we could do. Like, for example, no, we shouldn't be selling cars that have, like, you know, that get 10 miles to the gallon. That should be illegal. We shouldn't allow blacktop. All new roads should be paved with white top. We should be planting trees and plants all over the place in order to greenify. We should be limiting the population of cities that are dependent on water from drought zones like the Colorado River zone. We shouldn't be like, oh, let's keep growing Phoenix. That's a great idea. There's a lot of shit we should be doing, and we're not doing anything.
Agreed. I mean, but if you remember Donald Trump's climate thing, I believe this was in his first term, was that the temperature was going to reach, I think he said like 10 degrees above normal baseline or something like that. And I think if I'm not mistaken, they were making the argument that when the Arctic melts, that would allow gas exploration in the Arctic. It was something like that. Meaning their point of view is, we accept this is probably true, but we don't care. Right. That's their point of view. Like the 50-year plan or something like that. Look, I agree with you. I mean, if I was the president, President Thomas would have, would say, all right, we are starting a beautification office for the U.S. because we care about this country so much. We love it. Mm-hmm. It's the 250th anniversary. So we, in this office, will create a new branch of the government called beautification, where we will hire
Americans. That reminds me of Lady Bird Johnson, right? She ran a beautification project. I mean, it's hard for people who are not as old as I am because they don't know. But like, it used to be like when you drove on interstates and state routes across this country, there were billboards everywhere. And it was kind of cool, Americana, like, you know, 2 miles ahead, like Howard Johnson's or, you know, Red Roof Inn or whatever. But like, you know, and now you don't need it because obviously your phone will tell you like where Howard Johnson's, if one still exists, is. But like, she hated the billboards. And she was like, we should see trees, we should see farmland. And so she had this huge project to get rid of the billboards, and it worked.
Yeah, I would go further. I mean, I would do things like, as you said, plant trees. Okay, well, there may not be a fiscal incentive for people to plant trees, hence government. Mm-hmm. I would pay Americans to do that particular job. I would pay to build things like to cut the cost of food. So say, for example, houses that are, for the most part, autonomous, that take in like old factories, like we're doing in Richmond. Like we have a lot of factories in Richmond, and they've taken them and made them into apartments. Okay, what if you made them into greeneries where their food is grown, where you can grow plants and those type of things? So you could do it for basically inexpensively, especially if you build it where it's basically more so autonomous. Or if you want, you can hire people to do it. I mean, that's basically all it is, right? You're just finding a reason to hire people. And it just so happened to have a good reason to do so in a sense of, okay, we can do things in the country itself that needs to be done that nobody is effectively going to do. That would be one of the first main things, especially if we're talking about full employment and making sure that anybody who wants a job can get a job.
Like a new CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yes.
That, I love those three PR agencies.
Well, because I think you and I would make the argument that if anybody wants a job, they should be able to get a job.
100%.
And if the government can basically guarantee employment, okay, I know people are going to quibble with the guarantee part. But if you create an entire edifice of just, we just need people to do shit that is productive.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shit that would, like, should, is cool, but yes. There's no, like, market for.
Like, exactly. Hence so government.
For example, Sherwood Anderson, my favorite author, who wrote Winesburg, Ohio, during the Depression, he was, like a lot of other authors, out of work. The WPA paid him to basically do a book project called Hometown. He loved small town America. He was famous for writing about it. So they sent him all over the country during the Depression to photograph the end of mainstream life, you know, because it was really like with the automobile already challenged, right? Yeah. So he, you know, the general stores and all that stuff in typical mainstream USA, Main Street USA, all over the country. And he documented that. That book's amazing. It's an amazing, like, there's nothing else like it. It's like, I mean, if you're a sociologist and you want to know what America felt like in the 30s, there's no better place. That book would have never, he couldn't have told like Simon and Schuster, hey, I want to publish this book. They wouldn't have given a shit. But I'm glad the book exists.
Yeah. And I guess my feeling is there's a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily have a fiscal incentive. I mean, that's kind of on some level the point of government. Yeah, defense. Obviously, the military is the beating heart of a nation. You can't have a country without a military.
No.
But the second part of that is provide for the well-being of the citizenry itself. And I would argue that part of that is also ensuring the integrity of the country in an economic beautification sense, in a et cetera, et cetera. There are things that we would be benefited from that we could have an office for. We just don't think in those terms.
I would rather have a work program like y'all are talking about than a UBI, because people need something to do. Otherwise, they go crazy.
And we have stuff that needs to get done.
Yeah.
I mean, this country, I mean, the high-speed rail is not going to build itself.
No, I agree. No, and as a righty, I mean, I think y'all are converting me because I agree with everything y'all just said.
Are we? Welcome, comrade.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, think about it. I mean, the United States, like, you know, we have USAID, we have all these other programs all around the world helping these other countries just develop, right? And then we end up importing their populations anyway. So what's the point of even doing that over there?
We said, just do it here.
why not just take care of the home folks here? I'm serious. I mean, think about what I just said. Like, you're talking about there in Richmond, right? You know, with all those old factories and things. I mean, go all through the Rust Belt, go through any small town that's dying. You have all these dilapidated buildings. If people want work, you know, we could cut off, say, financial aid to Bangladesh.
Sure.
And take care of our people here, which should happen. That's a nationalist approach. You know, fix your own roof. Just the, to help your neighbor.
I was thinking about you, as I often do. But
good ways or bad ways?
It was about only in the worst possible ways.
Good.
It was talking about the Supreme Court decision revoking special protected status for the Haitians and Somalis, and a lot of the coverage was around 30% of the Haitians work in nursing homes, and like how. If they're kicked out, there won't be anyone to work at these nursing homes. Well, my mom died in one of those nursing homes. And I can tell you, and by the way, it was a pretty good one as far as they went. But they're all, and hers was no exception, totally understaffed. Like, there's nobody there. There's, like, nobody at the front desk. You can walk right in. There's like, when you need someone, like, hey, my mom needs help, you know, good luck. It's not – you got to go find someone. This is an example, right? Nursing homes need employees. So, okay, yeah, these are private enterprises, and they really shouldn't be. But even within a private enterprise, I think there could be government programs that say, you might work at this private nursing home, but you're a U.S. government employee. You work here at this, we've assigned you to this nursing home. Those facilities in an aging population, which we have now with the boomers, boomers are well into old age. we need more nursing home attendants. I mean, why are we importing Haitians to do shit that we could do when we have massive unemployment here?
I just finished
nursing homes. It's nurses in general. I can tell you, at the hospital, they were literally giving like $5,000 bonuses to get nurses. And it was mainly because they just didn't have enough. Many of them were foreigners. Many of them were from other countries. They just didn't have enough.
I know lots of people who want to study and become RNs, and they can't afford it, right? They can't afford the tuition. I mean, that's ridiculous.
There shouldn't be tuition. No, back when I worked at the hospital, one of the things that I brought up was that there should be an apprenticeship program. So there's nothing better than on-the-job training. You go in, you go through, you get trained, then you take a certification test. Why do you have to go to college for 2 years to do this? You don't, especially if you're doing the job every single day in the emergency room.
That's true.
That's what you do. That's why it used to be done. And one of the things, again. Yeah,
but then the college industrial complex doesn't collect their tuition lucre.
Exactly. Oh, fuck them. Seriously.
What?
Fuck them. Why do you need them?
Sir, that's the profit that you're talking about. That's our God.
Am I stuttering? Did I stutter? Was I unclear?
I'm just shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
No, I mean, I'm serious. We talked about this before. You know, if you're going to have universal health care, you got to have it. That means that the healthcare system should be managed by the government. By definition, it would be. So then why can't you have the National Guard actually going in and helping fill these roles? Why do you have to import a million people from around the world to go do jobs that Americans supposedly won't do? No, they're going to do it for free. That's the difference. If you take away the profit model.
They would do it. And you just have to pay.
Of course they would. Yeah. Of course. Well, you have to pay. That's the whole point.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Why the fuck should American employers have access to the entire global marketplace of potential employees, but American workers don't have access to the entire world of global employers?
Ted, the grocery
store. Balance between labor and management.
The grocery store my son works at, right across the street, you've been there. They've got five people working there on H-1B visas.
Yeah.
Because there's no one else here in Kalispell who's able to be a bag boy.
Yeah, ridiculous.
You want to know why I'm such a hard ass because of immigration? It's because of stuff like that. It screws the American worker.
I agree with you on that.
You are right.
I mean, I agree with you when the Trump argument came up about H-1B1 visas. And it's like, why are we doing this? You had two foreigners. Elon Musk and I forget the other guy's name, who were like, no, H-1B1 visas are fantastic.
Yeah, Vivek Ramaswamy. I like that guy. Liked him.
Trump hires H-1B visa people at his resort.
Yeah.
Vivek blocked me on
immigration for every speech.
Ridiculous. Vivek blocked me on X because I trolled him so hard.
Guys, we're it's 10:01. I got to go hit TMI. Well, Robbie, I'm going to see you soon. Have a great weekend, JT. See you Monday.
Have a good one, guys. Be safe, okay?
Happy 4th. Okay, bye.
Tell Manila, hi.